So there is this absolutely all caps huge prospecting mistake that so many sales reps are making each and every day. And truly, it is the root of all prospecting evil. And today, we're going to talk all about it. Man, we're going to really dive into it, dissect it, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what you can do about it. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 10,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so before we begin, I want to let you know that today's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast is brought to you by our 50 Ways to Find and Approach Potential Clients webinar, going to be coming up this Thursday, July 23rd, 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm going to be sharing all the juicy details with you at the end of the podcast. And if you're like me and you happen to be impatient, which is part, that's part of our DNA in sales, kind of being impatient, right? Well, you can certainly pull the car over and visit yoursalesplaybook.com/July webinar. Let me say that again, just in case, yoursalesplaybook.com/July webinar. So today we're going to be talking about the root of all prospecting evil. I feel like I'm getting very dramatic in saying it, but I think when we go through this together, you're going to agree with me. And if not, heck, it's not going to be the first time or the last time that you and I disagree with each other. It keeps it interesting. But you ready for the big reveal? I mean, it's not going to shock you when I tell you what it is, but I want you to allow me the honor of beating the absolute shit out of the point, because I have a lot of stats I want to share with you, as well as some things that we're doing to contribute to this mess that we find ourselves in. So you ready for this? The root of all prospecting evil is failure to understand and adapt your approach to respect the fact that it's way too easy to be disregarded and deleted. Let me say it again, because that was one hell of a mouthful. The root of all prospecting evil is failure to understand and adapt your approach to respect the fact that it's way too easy to be disregarded and deleted. Matter of fact, not that I think that's so brilliant, but I think we should have that printed out and have it by our computers and our phones and stuff, because it really comes down to respecting the people that we're about to approach. So there's really two sides to this whole concept of this failure to understand and adapt to it being way too easy for people to disregard and delete us. There's two parts of it. Two sides of it, however way you want to look at it. But there's the part where you and I can't do anything about it. It's just simply an awareness thing, that we have to be aware of it. And we're going to start there in a moment. But then there's a part of this whole thing that you absolutely can do something about it. And I think they go hand in hand, and you really have to understand the two of them, okay? So let us now commence with the beating the shit out of the point portion of the podcast. So the latest report from Radicati Group, and I've been quoting these folks, every year they put out a brand new email report. The latest one, I believe it came out in March of this year, and it tells us that, you ready for this? There are 265 billion with a B emails sent and received each and every day. And we're in at about 121 emails that the average person is sending and receiving each and every day. So one more time, we have worldwide, we have about 265 billion emails sent and received each and every day. When we break that down per person, it's about 121 per person. But remember, this is average. So the people that you and I are hoping to reach, these decision makers and C-level types of folks, they are north of 200 of these sent and received each and every day. And as a matter of fact, there's an organization called At Task, and they released a report that they found. And by the way, part of this I'm going to quote has to do with them. The other part, I don't have a source for it, but I can tell you, I mean, you can Google it yourself and you can see it for yourself. But recently, I've been seeing numbers as high as 25%. So, let's say 14 to 25% of the work week is spent with email. Think about that. Think about your own world as a sales rep. We do a lot of emailing, right? Now imagine that you are a business owner, a decision maker, a C-level person, and imagine that it's probably going to be even more than us. So it's pretty substantial. Now, let's go on a little bit more, right? Because I told you there's a lot of stuff here I want to share. There is a report that came out from Deloitte, where they found that the average person, and there's all different numbers when it comes to this from all different organizations. So if you hear me kind of changing my tune and you find yourself saying, "Well, I think Castaing gave us a different number," it's because it was a different source. I mean, it's nuts what you find out here. But this is from Deloitte. The average person is checking their smartphone 46 times a day. Now, I want to remind you again, the people that you and I are trying to do business with, ideally, these decision makers, C-level people, business owners, it's going to be more. Now, if you happen to be trying to, like the people that you're dealing with are millennials, and more and more and more of them are our buyers are getting younger. My friends in the printing industry, right now, you're saying, yeah, you think, right? More and more, they're getting younger and younger and younger, probably because all of us are getting older and older and older, right? I mean, it's just kind of like, a given. Well, millennials are in it about 150 plus times a day. And this is according to a study that was conducted by an organization called Atlassian. And I'm glad I'm pronouncing that right, because I was going to call it Atlassian. And then because I'm a freaking genius, I decided to like research further, like how the hell do you pronounce it? Because I just didn't want to get any crap from these people saying, jackass, like you mispronounced it. So, which is just like get me in a bad mood, getting a brawl with these people from Atlassian. So, anyway, and the way I remembered it is that I thought, because you have to have these cute little things, I thought Atlassian rhymes with Assian, which I would be kind of Assian if I mispronounced it and I called him Atlassian. So that's just the way my crazy mind works. See, you get all these little, no charge for that, by the way. Also, moving on to more serious stuff and less feeble attempts at humor, the average person is interrupted from their tasks. You ready for this? Every 8.5 minutes. Let me say this again and then tell you what I'm basing this on, because I got a little creative with this one. I want to just like be straight up honest with you guys. Nothing but the truth from your Uncle Paul here. The average person is interrupted from their task every 8.5 minutes. So here's what I did and why I got creative with this. I didn't invent numbers that I thought would be cool and just like use the magic eight ball to come up with it or whatever it is. There was actually an interesting article that was put out from a woman by the name of Wendy Cole. And in this, she shared that the average person is interrupted 7 times an hour. So I just did a little bit of division there, 60 minutes in an hour. What does that come, seven divided by seven? And this is what I came up with. And, proof positive why I can't quit my day job ever to become a mathematician. So, and did I tell you guys I flunked math? And by the way, you hear me perking up, getting kind of shitty now, because now this is like triggered a memory. I actually changed my major in college several times because of the fact that we had to take accounting. And the only thing in my mind that's worse than math and all that kind of stuff is like accounting, especially when back then I knew what I knew now, and I did not have to tap into the brilliant minds of my professors. You know what I knew then that I know definitively now? That you hire an accountant for that shit. I mean, seriously. It's like I don't need to know how to do that. And I just need to know that they're not embezzling millions of dollars, which is easy right now because I don't make millions of dollars. So see how it all circle of life, baby. It all works out. So moving along, we have the average person, and this one, I hate to say it's sketchy because it comes from Fast Company magazine, but I've never fully bought it, like the exact number they're talking about. And I'll do some splaining about it in a second. But according to Fast Company magazine, they found that the average person is exposed to 3,000 advertising messages each and every day. But here's the splaining part. Let's just say they were completely full of shit, and they just needed to sell more magazines. So yeah, let's just kind of enhance the numbers a little bit, like you guys are doing on your expense reports. Don't think I don't know that trick, right? And they said, let's just make that number a little higher there, make it look really good and dramatic. We'll sell some more magazines. Even still, what if we're only a couple of hundred, man? That's a lot, right? So let us move along, and then I will quickly arrive at the point to all these numbers and stuff. I'm not just doing it to sound smart to you guys. I mean, so that you guys are ahead at the next open bar that you go to, and you kind of kid, you go in there hanging out. You want to look like you really know your stuff. But according to a study that was conducted by the University of California at San Diego, we're consuming about 34 gigabytes of information each and every day. When you start looking at all those advertising messages, you look at the documents that are coming across our desks and stuff. Remember, think like a decision maker and look at all the things that are coming their way, all the emails, all this stuff that's coming their way, man. It's kind of nutty, right? And something I heard years ago that I have not verified, but it's one of those things I really don't have to, because it just to me it just makes sense. But I remember when I worked for Dale Carnegie, one of the things that we said quite often, probably people are still running around saying it over there, by the way, that there is now more information in your daily newspaper than the average person who lived in the 17th century would be exposed to in their entire lifespan. So there's more information in your newspaper, right? I mean, you can even look at it. We're probably exposed to more information, whether it be that newspaper or those 34 gigabytes or whatever it is of information each and every day, than someone would be exposed to in their entire lifetime in the 17th century. Now, I have no way of checking it out because this is going to shock you. I could not find anyone who happened to be around since the 17th century. Said it's, especially like some real old farts that I knew like for a while. And they, like the best that we're doing there is about maybe like people that go back about 90 years. So, if any of you know anybody from the 17th century, run that by them and, see if they can verify that information. But in the meantime, you're just going to have to take my word for it. And, one last thing that I have not gotten all the numbers on it. And it's like the thing with like how many times people check their phones, even with things with email. You guys know there's just so much conflicting data. So what I usually try to do is go with reputable companies and even companies that are saying what pretty much everyone else is saying out there and citing sources and everything else. But let's look at how much time the average person is in a meeting each week, each month, or whatever it is. And it's interesting because there was a study that was done, and you'll have to forgive me. I thought I had written it down somewhere. Actually, I read it on HubSpot, but they were citing a different source. And the average person each month sits in about 62 meetings a month. And again, if you were to Google average, amount of meetings and put HubSpot or whatever, you can find the source of that. I'm awfully sorry because I really thought I had that written down. But about 62 meetings a month. And once again, just like the other things I've shared with you today, kind of like a your mileage will could vary, right? Because if you look at decision makers, typically they're going to be in more meetings than the average person. You look at business owners and people like that. So it just, it becomes even more dramatic. So here's the point of all this. When you have this much noise and you have all these things that I mentioned competing for the attention of these decision makers. And by the way, we also know that the average attention span is about 8 seconds, according to a report that the BBC did back in 2010. So you have all these things, you have all this noise, all these things competing for the attention of these crazy busy decision makers. You and I have already 2.5 strikes against us before we ever pick up a phone, knock on a door, send an email, reach out on LinkedIn, whatever your method is. So let's talk very, very quickly about what we can do about this. And what really, in a way, what are we doing right now that might be contributing to the fact that we're not getting the results that we want? Well, first of all, not appreciating the fact that we've got these people that have all this information, all these things tugging at their attention. And then when we show up with a message that's typical and boring and me-centered. And when I mean me-centered, I mean, yes, it could be me as in me, or it could be me as in my company. Things that in the very beginning of an interaction, I promise you, the average person doesn't give a shit about. They really don't. I'd like to believe that you and I are so interesting that they would, but they don't. And I think that's a fatal mistake that we're making. And it just really smiles at the fact that these people are so crazy busy and all these things going on that, why would they care about it? So what do you do about it? So one of the things that I've shared quite a bit on my podcast, as well as my blog over at yoursalesplaybook.com, is when you are reaching out to someone, I don't care if it's in an email. Again, I don't care if it's in an InMail over on LinkedIn. I don't care if it's on a phone call, but open with them instead of about you. Remember, the typical interaction usually starts off, especially like in an email, it might be Dear Mary. And many times people introduce themselves, which I think is silly in an email, kind of my name is Paul Castain, to me, it's redundant. Like they didn't see who it was from. I don't click on any email without first seeing, well, who is this from? Right? I mean, think about that, right? So anyway, you have your typical email that begins and it leads with something about the company. So if I were sending an email to Mary, it might be, "Hi, Mary. It's Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems. We're a full service end-to-end one source training, blah, blah, blah," and just going on about Castain Training Systems. Now, remember what I told you before. You have a person who is sending and receiving a ton of emails. 100, what do we say, 121 average per person? We have this person that has all these phone calls, all these interruptions, really short attention span, all these meetings, internal, external. They have, all these things that they have to do. And now you're starting with something that they really don't care about. So what I think you should do, and what I've tested for the last few years, is just reversing the whole equation around and leading with something about them. The next part, I call it the phrase that pays. And provided you've researched the company and you've done your homework, which I believe you need to do before sending an email also, A great phrase that you can use is simply begin your email or even your call with this phrase. You ready? I noticed that. So again, the examples that I've used many times here, if I've noticed that you're expanding your sales force, because that could be a typical reason or a trigger, if you will, trigger event, why I might be contacting you. So if I am reaching out to Mary, I'm going to start off with, you know, hi, Mary, I noticed that you're expanding your sales force in the New York area. You see, I am leading with something that Mary is a decision maker, cares about a lot more than me telling her, A, you know, I'm Paul Castain, which she's already concluded by looking at the from thing in the email. I know, brilliant stuff, right? And if she can't conclude that, I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, like, aside from patting her on the head, I'm thinking maybe we might not have a good fit here. So it's a lot more interesting to lead with something about them. You can do this in emails. You can do this in snail mail. You can do this certainly as your opening statement when you are cold calling people. So that's the very first thing with the messaging that can cut through all the noise and busyness that we're up against, those 2.5 strikes that I told you about. The next thing is we have to be willing to change the flavor of our message. The thing is that most of us, myself too, I mean, you can't see it. My hand's up right now as if you could see it. But then I have to remind myself, hey, dumbass, they can't see you, Castain. Sitting here raising my hand like you'd see like I'm on board here. And most of us are guilty of a one flavor and one flavor only courtship. It's kind of having the same shitty date over and over and over and over again. It's almost like, in a way, it's like Groundhog Day, right? All the events happening over and over and over and over and over again. It gets real boring real fast. And our one flavor is usually, I'd like to sell you something. And yeah, we vary that flavor a little bit, but it's still the same flavor. We might say something along the lines of, I'd like to get together with you so I can sell you something. We're not going to say it like that, but that's the gist. Like to follow up with you so I could sell you something. Just circling back so I could sell you something. And it just kind of gets old real quick. So my suggestion is that you change the flavor of your communication. And just a few ideas for you to consider. How about sending along a resource? A no strings attached idea. How about doing a little matchmaking and introducing them to someone who could either buy from them or help them or be a resource to them? How about inviting them to something, maybe the local event, an industry event, something like that? One of the most powerful things you can do, and I want you to circle this one and put little arrows that say, over here, dude, or dudette, if you are of the dudette variety, you might want to ask a question. End your emails with a question. We were taught from a young age to respond to a question. So, and that's a nice little experiment for you to do with your emails. End it with a question. It also changes up the whole flavor of everything. Again, you're not just going in there saying, hey, I want to sell you something. You have this whole purpose in an email, and you can even put that in the subject line. Use their name. Let's just say it's Todd. Quick question, Todd. And then you ask that quick question of Todd. I mean, like, seriously, there you go. And you'll notice that questions typically get a higher response rate. So that's one of the things you can do. Change the flavor. The other thing you can do is change the platform or the venue. Most of us, aside from having one flavor and one flavor only, have one platform, maybe two. And that's about it. And it's usually phone and email. And, you know, what's funny is that you have a lot of the hardcore traditionalists who really feel that if, you know, like you don't need anything more really than the phone and that emails are lazy and, you know, the other things take you away from the phone and everything else. And I'm here to tell you that I sell lots of things as a result of complimenting my phone and my email. And when I go to pay my taxes every year, The IRS tells me that all that other stuff counts as revenue, that I can't get out of it. Like, I can't say, hey, I don't want to pay taxes on that, because all the hardcore people think I'm a lightweight in sales. They say, tough shit, Paul. You owe us money. So, I mean, it's crazy, right? I'm giving you all kinds of useful information. I'm here to tell you it counts as revenue. So, some things that you might want to think about. Aside from the phone and email, you also want to be embracing snail mail, FedEx, drop in, drop off, video, creative approaches, referrals and warm intros, traditional networking, social networking, and there's a lot of other things too. Let me say those again, just in case. Phone, email, snail mail, FedEx, drop in, drop off, wax on, wax off, video, creative approaches, referrals and warm intros, as well as traditional networking and social networking. The final thing that I think pushes us over the top in getting disregarded and deleted is embracing a bad cadence. Let me say it again, embracing a bad cadence. And there are two deadly extremes to this. We have the first one, which would really be a cadence where we have like sort of infrequent prospecting, where we're just like we're here hot and heavy for a little bit of time because we have typically because we have time. For a lot of people who are in charge of both the hunting and the farming, what happens is that the prospecting kind of gets backburnered because they're servicing accounts, they've got administrative things and the TPS reports and all this stuff. Maybe I'm just going out on a limb. Maybe they're avoiding some of that because they'd rather take, an order from someone than going and hunting someone and I don't know, maybe getting their ass kicked by somebody saying an awful thing that hurts our little feelings, right? So what happens is we end up by putting like the hunting and the prospecting on the back burner, and we approach it when we have time or when things get really good and bad for us and like we're under the gun and we've got to make something happen or we're trying to qualify for President's Club. It's that year-end sprint, that month-end sprint, that quarter-end sprint. Now all of a sudden we're embracing some of those things. And what happens is it's infrequent. So what I always tell people, and I've told you guys, imagine if someone that you didn't know was trying to have a relationship with you. I really don't care if you want to look at it as a romantic type of relationship. For those of you who are single, I am not allowed to think that way. Mrs. Uncle Paul she would knock my effing jaw loose. I mean, I mean, she would like drop kick me, and it would be bad. And my monkey style kung fu is ineffective against that bitch. I'm telling you. I mean, she would drop me. She'd be like, "Tap out, Uncle Paul," and it would be bad. It would be bad. I'm telling you. So, whether you want to look at it as somebody trying to have a romantic type of relationship with you, provided you are single, or just like trying to be your friend, trying to be in your life, and you don't know this person very well, you're a little bit aware of them. But you just don't think of them at this point. It's very, very new. So imagine they're trying to have a relationship with you, and they're here kind of in your face for a few days, maybe a week, and then they're gone for 6 weeks. Then they're back, I don't know, for 2 or 3 weeks, and then they're gone for like another 2 or 3 months. Then they're like back again for maybe a month. Then they're gone for 6 months. They're here and they're gone and they're here and they're gone. And, as crazy as that is, and, the question I always ask, would you trust that person? We always talk about know, like, and trust. Would you even know them at that level, enough to like them and certainly trust them? Could you have a relationship with that person? I don't really think you could. Remember now, you might be thinking, well, I have people in my life like that right now, but they're already in your life. They weren't attempting to get into your life. They're already there. I mean, like family and dear friends and even, sometimes significant others, which I mean, life of a salesperson, man, we're road warriors. So I get that, but I'm talking about not existing relationships. But you're doing that right now if you are prospecting infrequently. Now, the opposite. is also true when we're smothering people. And, you know, I see this, I don't know what's going on with this. I think part of it is that there are sales trainers training on what I'm about to completely badmouth without going into names, because I don't know who's doing it. Don't care either. I just want to make sure that you guys aren't doing it. And I also think that there's software out there that's doing this on your behalf. But remember, as a business owner, I'm on the receiving end of a lot of emails and a lot of cold calls. But with regard to email, the first thing that I see that just is just a really annoying habit and shuts something down prematurely, because it's just like, it's really like annoying and needy and just obnoxious and very typical now that a lot of people are doing it, is you send an email. Typically, you guys have to understand, unless you have like the most brilliant email in the world, most of the emails you send out go unresponded to, right? In fact, I'm sorry to depress you, but, you know, according to some numbers that I pulled from both MailChimp and Constant Contact, you know, only about 18% of those emails are even being opened, let alone responded to. Seriously, about 18% open rate we're talking about. So what happens now that I'm seeing, somebody sends you an email, and then, like, I don't know, 48 hours later, 72 hours later, you get the same email forwarded. And then it's a statement like, just circling back to see if you had a chance to read my email. Or I almost get like this indignant like vibe when people say, you know, did you get a chance to read this email yet? And, you know, it's the same shitty email you sent 24 hours ago. But then it gets better. And then a few days later, I notice it's like three times they'll send you the same shitty email. The third time is not the charm. It's usually something like, just wanted to give this a friendly bump to the top of your inbox. And I'm saying to myself, you know, to me, it's almost like, you remember when you were a kid and you closed your eyes and you said, you can't see me? I got news for you. They can see you. So by dressing up that same piece of shit in a different set of clothes, you still have a piece of shit. You know, you have that first email. They did not respond to it. Why in the hell would you forward it again and then again? Show some creativity. Change up your message. The other thing that I just think is wrong, I'm sorry, and I know that there's sales thought leaders that would love nothing more than just like have it out with me over this, but it is pathetic, and I hate this next thing. It's leaving a voicemail and then immediately calling, and oh, I'm sorry, leaving a voicemail and then immediately sending an email with, you know, a subject line, voicemail. And then you're telling them that you've left them a voicemail message. Now, there are some people who believe that people are so busy they need a reminder to check their email. I'm here to tell you that most grown-ups don't need a reminder from another grown-up to check their voicemail. To me, that would be like saying, don't, you know, like don't forget to tie your shoes and don't forget to breathe. And I was going to say don't forget to wash your hands after you go to the bathroom, but you know, I think people walk out half the time, especially in the airports, and see them leave, and I'm like, whoa, dude, I'm not shaking your hand, man. What the hell? But, you know, I digress. But it's just silly, and it's needy, and it's getting in someone's face. So really where this plays into the whole cadence thing is that there's nothing wrong with following up after leaving somebody a voicemail message. But why do you need to do it a minute afterwards? You know, to me, give it some space to breathe. It just really comes across as desperate and needy and just really boring because so many people do it. So, and P.S., you've interrupted them twice now inside of 3 minutes. And you remember we were talking about all those interruptions that people have. You just contributed to all that. One other thing that I just need to mention. But there was actually a study where they found that the time to recover after the average interruption, right, after an interruption on average is about 23 minutes. Again, I look at that the way I look at the Fast Company numbers. I don't know if I'm fully bought in that it takes 23 minutes. I just know that it isn't immediate. To me, it's a lot like you're having a conversation with somebody about like sports. Then somebody comes along, interrupts you, and says something like, "Hey, has anybody been camping?" Like, and then the person leaves, and then you look at the other person, and you're like, "What are we talking about?" And that might not be the exact scenario that we've all experienced, but we've experienced that in general, where we're trying to get our head back into whatever it is we were talking about, let alone what we were doing. But same thing happens here. So my suggestion is, when it comes to call cadence, is to do something we call it, and what I teach is a process called communication mapping. The reason why I call it communication mapping is because sales trainers and sales coaches like me, we like to have fancy names for simple shit, right? Because we want to sound very smart to you so that you hire me as a coach and a speaker and a trainer and all those things. So I don't want to make it sound as simple as it really is, but it really is simple. And what you want to do is you want to take all the different forms of outreach and all the different flavors that we talked about before. Forms of outreach, we talked about phone, email, snail mail, FedEx, drop-in, drop-off, video, creative, referral, warm intro, traditional networking, social networking. The flavors, a resource, an idea, matchmaking, an invite, a question, things like that. And then what you want to do is you want to map your communication, and you can kind of call it touch number one. And you could decide, well, what's that going to be? Okay, well, maybe touch number one traditionally is going to be some kind of an intro. And you want to change up the venue a little bit, right? You want to be a little different. So instead of doing what everybody else is doing, which is introducing themselves through an email, why don't you introduce yourself like with a handwritten note through snail mail? Nobody ever does that. So that could be touch number one. Then what you do is you kind of have a little note there. I'm going to wait X amount of time. You're going to put that in your CRM for a little alert. So let's just say that after the snail mail, you're going to wait until you know that they've had it in their hand for about 24 to 48 hours. At that point, touch number two. Maybe it's going to be a phone call. Now, when you're planning that, you have to plan for the fact that 9 out of 10 times, where is that call going to go? Is it going to go to a person picking up the call? Or do you think the vast majority of the time it's going to go to a voicemail message? So you want to have that voicemail message crafted as part of this communication map. And after you leave that voicemail, you want to say, okay, well, how long am I going to wait after that voicemail until I do touch number three? Maybe touch number three is going to be an email. Much in the same way of that shitty email that I was telling you that people send immediately, but you're not going to send it immediately. Make sure you hear me on that. Maybe a day or two later, and you're referencing that, you left them a voicemail, and maybe you embed a video of you talking to them, calling them by name, and 58, 59 seconds or whatever, that kind of thing. But do you see what we've done here? We've premeditated the touches. And when you do that, when you premeditate these and you create a communication map, instead of doing what the average person does, here's what the average person does. An alarm goes off in the CRM. As they are reaching for their keyboard, fingers going to the keyboard, or as their hand is going to pick up the phone, usually just those two things, right? Anything else is just out of the ordinary for the average rep. They are deciding in that moment what they're going to say. And I'm here to tell you that to me equals really bad communication, not effective. So imagine you premeditate that communication. You think about what you're going to say, through what venue or platform you're going to use, snail mail, email, something creative, a drop-in, a drop-off, an event or something like that. And you're, changing up the flavor. You're deciding how long you're going to wait. You see, when you do it that way, the quality goes up tenfold. And it's not like you have to reinvent the communication map for every single person that you go after. You could have I call them flight plans. You can have a generic flight plan for different verticals, for different types of, companies, that time, a different level of context, C-level versus, say, a soldier, right? Or an influencer or whatever. But it makes a huge difference. So that's kind of the stuff that you can do that can impact it. But There you have it. I mean, this is how, like to me, this is why this whole business of not respecting how busy people are, how noisy it is, how easy it is to get lost in the proverbial sauce is really at the root of all prospecting evil. We also talked about why this exists, right? We went into a lot of detail, shared a lot of different stats and reports, my own experience in there, and then we talked a little bit about what you can do about it. Now, there is something else that you can do about it. We have a webinar that's coming up this Thursday, and it has all of this stuff in mind. It's coming up this Thursday, July 27th at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Now, before we go on, right about now, you might be saying, "Uncle Paul, I got a thing that day. I'm getting my back waxed, man. I'm, getting my glutes checked. I don't know what the hell you're doing. Colonic. I don't know, don't care." But I'm telling you, if you can't make it, sign up anyway. Not to donate to the Uncle Paul Foundation, but donate to the cause here. My toupee that I want to get, which I'm thinking, I want to get like a T.J. Hooker style William Shatner kind of like fuzzy fro. I think it would be kind of ballsy. I think I might do it. But seriously, the reason why I want you to sign up anyway is because I always record. I deliver it live, and I will record the session and send it out to everybody who can't make it. But let me tell you what we're going to be talking about that day. We're going to be talking about 25 ways to find the business that everyone is missing out there. Because there's a lot of places that aren't as typical. They aren't as mainstream. They're things that when I teach them to my clients, they kind of say, "Oh my gosh, I never really thought of that. That makes perfect sense." Some of them are just completely counterintuitive. So I'm really anxious to share those with you. We're also going to talk about five creative ways to get someone's attention. Five ways to use snail mail to stand out. And I bet you that's a huge area for a lot of you guys. You're really not using snail mail beyond. By the way, before you say, "Yes, I am using snail mail," I'm talking about beyond the thank you cards that you sent. I'm talking about to like get someone's attention to hear you out, even as an intro, that kind of thing. Stay in touch. I'm not talking about a thank you. Five email templates. So I'm not only going to show you a few really cool email techniques, I'm actually going to send you the five email templates that I find get opened the most, read the most, and responded to the most. We're going to talk about the one sentence that gets a potential client's attention like immediately. You and I don't have a lot of time to like try to get someone's attention, but more importantly, they don't have a lot of time to decide if it's worthy of their attention. So what do people do? They scan emails, right? So there's some really cool things that we need to know to do in terms of tactics that are going to get their attention. I have one sentence that immediately bottom lines it and gets their attention. We're going to talk about three ways to generate leads on LinkedIn without spending like a gazillion hours, if that is even a word, and I don't really care if it isn't. We're going to talk about a phone template, and of course, when I say talk about it, I'm going to send you the template, a phone template that my coaching clients, that I teach them, that they're using, and they're using it to generate more appointments. So, what I'd like you to do, if this session today, this free session of the Sales Playbook podcast appeal to you and you really want to take this to the next level in terms of what can I do about this? How can I get someone's attention? How can I stand out? How can I even like get in front of more opportunities and between now and the end of the year, right? So I can get some better numbers, man, make a few more bucks. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I want you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/July webinar. Yoursalesplaybook.com/July webinar. And with that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get it. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com to learn about my one-on-one coaching services and how we might work together. Visit yoursalesplaybook.com/hire_Paul.